Good evening. On behalf of the Catholic Community of St. John and Blessed Sacrament, may I extend a warm welcome to each and every one. The great poet and author George Santayana wrote, "Those who do not remember the past are condemned to repeat it." This very quote is on a sign in Auschwitz as visitors go to that place. We, the young and old and in between, have come from places near and far to hear the unimaginable. We have come to listen to the unfolding events of one of the darkest periods in modern history, and to hear directly from one who not only experienced it firsthand, but who survived to share her story. We come to listen. We come also to laugh and to cry, to ponder, to try to understand, to ask questions, to search, to remember, to hope, and to pray never, ever again. And so with open ears, open eyes, and hearts, may this night unfold and be a blessing to all.
The reading we have this evening is a reflection of Pope Francis at Yad Vashem in 2014. It's entitled, "Adam, where are you? Where are you, O man? What have you come to? In this place, this memorial of the Shoah, we hear God's question echo once more. Adam, where are you?" This question is charged with all the sorrow of a father who has lost his child. The father knew the risk of freedom. He knew that his children could be lost. Yet perhaps not even the father could imagine so great a fall, so profound an abyss. Here, before the boundless tragedy of the Holocaust, that cry, "Where are you?" echoes like a faint voice in an unfathomable abyss. "Adam, who are you? I no longer recognize you. Who are you, O man? What have you become? Of what horror have you been capable? What made you fall to such depths? Certainly it is not the dust of the earth from which you were made. The dust of the earth is something good, the work of my hands. Certainly it is not the breath of life which I breathed into you. That breath comes from me, and it is something good. No, this abyss is not merely the work of your own hands, your own heart. Who corrupted you? Who disfigured you? Who led you to presume that you are the master of good and evil? Who convinced you that you were God? Not only did you torture and kill your brothers and sisters, but you sacrificed them to yourself because you made yourself a God. Today, in this place, we hear once more the voice of God. Adam, where are you? From the ground there rises up a soft cry. Have mercy on us, Lord. To you, O Lord our God, belongs righteousness, but to us, confusion of face and shame. A great evil has befallen us, such as never happened under the heavens. Now, Lord, hear our prayer. Hear our plea. Save us in your mercy. Save us from this horror. Almighty Lord, a soul in anguish cries out to you. Hear, Lord, and have mercy. We have sinned against you. You reign forever. Remember us in your mercy. Grant us the grace to be ashamed of what we men have done, to be ashamed of this massive idolatry, of having despised and destroyed our own flesh, which you formed from the earth, to which you gave life with your own breath of life. Never again, Lord, never again. Adam, where are you? Here we are, Lord, shamed by what man, created in your own image and likeness, was capable of doing. Remember us in your mercy.
Hi, I'm Dawn Miller Irina. I'm a member of the Catholic community of St. John and Blessed Sacrament. Our community has been busy readying itself for Magda, and I'd like to thank some people. From those operating the audio and videotape, to Julie, Mark, and Marilyn for their gifts of music, and Dan's wonderful reading of Pope Francis's address. Thank you all so much. For those behind the scenes, typing, printing, flyers and programs, thank you. To the youth group, ushers and Susan, and all those who are assisting with the setup and the cleanup of our reception, thank you. I would like to give a special thank you to the cookie bakers from our community, including St. John's Music Ministry and the Blessed Sacrament Hungarian Club, who chose to make some authentic Hungarian treats in Magda's honor. And thank you, Nancy Zebiak, from the bottom of my heart, for being with me throughout the planning and execution of tonight's presentation. Father Andrew knew what he was doing when he partnered us together. Thank you too, Father Andrew. As I was told yesterday by two Jewish women, that man is in the right profession. Thanks to my mother, who opened her beautiful home up for Rochelle and Magda this week. And last but not least, thanks to my husband, Leonard. He's gone so far as to catch the cold I have while working shoulder to shoulder with this project. Thanks a lot, honey. I've been given the privilege, the great privilege, of introducing Magda Brown. But first, let me give you a bit of background. It is only because of my oldest son Adam's decision that I ever even crossed paths with Magda. You see, Adam had the good sense to marry Magda's brilliant, loving, strong, and compassionate granddaughter, Amy Rainey. My world all at once was enhanced. I received a beautiful daughter-in-law and her mother, Rochelle Brown Rainey. Adam and Amy got mother-in-law bookends. They were complete. We had the Jewish mother-in-law on one side and the Catholic mother-in-law on the other. Oy! And yes, the frosting on the cake was our marvelous Magda. She hates it when we make over her. After a few years of interacting with her as part of my family, I realized that we really needed to bring Magda's message here to Davison. It has taken about 3 years to coordinate all our schedules, but here we are. I'm so excited and honored to be sharing this warm, wise, and witty woman. She has courageously traveled many paths in her 92 years. Some have been filled with unimaginable horrors, and others have brought hope and miracles. Throughout the entirety of her life, Magda hasn't just survived. She has thrived with dignity. She has broken bones and compressed vertebrae in her back, but she just keeps on going. Once, she even Skyped her presentation from her hospital bed. She's been on stages with presidents, dignitaries, even, get this, bishops and cardinals. Her life's journey truly has been ordained by God to get the story out to as many people as possible. To date, her audience has outnumbered 100,000. I have no idea how many of you are out there today, but we're going to be ticking those numbers, aren't we? It is with a deep sense of humility that I ask you, my friends, to welcome Holocaust survivor Magda Brown.
The inconvenience of waiting, but technical difficulties, what are you going to do? You just have to obey management. Well, thank you for coming and listening to the 20th century's worst tragedy on earth. Now, why do I emphasize worst tragedy? After all, there were wars in between, there were famine, there were so many different ways of people dying. But during the Holocaust, they killed people unnecessarily. The Holocaust was a premeditated, scientifically coordinated mass murder. And I mean every single word here. It was prearranged to the last dot. So how did that all work out in Europe? All of you are familiar with Hitler and his rise to power in 1933. From that moment on, many things were erupting. First of all, Hitler didn't like the Jehovah's Witnesses. He didn't like the gypsies. He didn't like the homosexuals. But most fervently, he disliked the Jewish race. So within his power, he created many, many tragedies. When he came into power in 1933, he started creating a law called the Nuremberg Laws. These were also many discriminatory laws to be obeyed in Germany. Then, 1939, the Second World War broke out, and the German army was occupying many European countries. Now, what the Jewish army had done pre-Second World War, they had two groups of soldiers. There was the Wehrmacht, which was Germany's steady military unit. But then from Hitler time on, they started training the Nazi group. Now, these soldiers were trained to kill, not the enemy, but kill the undesirables. And they were trained to ultimate, intimate, perfect perfection. Every step was planned out. So let me go back to, first of all, they created the Nuremberg Laws, which were also anti-Jewish and anti-many people against. So anyhow, Hungary was occupied by the Nazis as the time was March 19, 1944. So from that moment on, the moving the Jewish people out of their home into the gas chambers went with ultimate expediency, because they experienced these procedures for 10 years already. And the other tragedy that Hungary had, with the Nazi unit occupying Hungary, Adolf Eichmann, the chief killer, escorted them. So with his expertise guarding the, or escorting the soldiers what to do, in less than 2 months, these are the following things they have accomplished. They occupied the country March 19th. In less than a week, we were ordered to put the Star of David on our clothing. Without that, we were not permitted to go out on the streets. So, but this is nothing. Then came the next law. The next law was all the Jewish people were incarcerated in a ghetto. Now, for the children's knowledge, a ghetto in America, we understand that an ethnic group decides to reside in a certain community. But that's it. But in real life, the ghetto meant that all the Jewish people had to be placed in a ghetto area. So I happen to live in a big city, so in every county, the capital city was allocated to become the ghetto area. Now what have they done here was that the, let's say you lived in a suburb or a farm area outside the major city. So the police came to your door and gave an order to the, actually the Nazis gave an order to the local police department, identical everywhere, the same flyer. Tell the Jewish people in your community to line up on the street. They can take with them only one little suitcase of belonging, maybe a 2-3 day supply. That's it. Walk out of their home, which they will never see ever again. So they line them up on the streets, and when all the Jewish people gathered in this particular town, for instance, then they marched them to the capital city. Depending on the distance, sometimes they were able to put them on some horse and buggy carriage, but 90% of the time the people had to get to the location on foot. Now remember, these are all age people. So now they marched them to the big city where the ghetto is. In my case, I lived in the house that my grandfather built maybe 40 years before that, and that particular section became part of the ghetto. So my family remained in the house. But my house had my parents, my brother and I, and an aunt and uncle. These are 6 people. Now this police, which they were called the gendarmes, would escort the people from the other areas to the ghetto section and shove a bunch of people in. They didn't count that maybe this home would have room for maybe another 5 people. But ladies and gentlemen, my home became the residency for 40 people. You cannot imagine what crowded conditions can create. A, these people were totally exhausted from whatever distance they had to march. Then they were confused. You know, where do I find a corner in this crowded house to sit down with that tired body and that itty-bitty little bag? So there was crowded condition. Then every human behavior you studied in psychology 1, it was there. There was the quiet one, the noisy one, the praying one, the sick one, and each had their own serious condition and problem. So nevertheless, somehow or another, they got into the ghetto area now, and once you were inside the ghetto, they were no longer out. It was cordoned off, walled off with police guarded within. So if you had to go to a doctor or a pharmacy or something, forget it. We were blessed with an employee of my father who was a lovely Catholic lady, and she was able to sneak into some various roads to get to our ghetto area and try to sneak in some food or medicine, whatever we needed. So anyhow, but otherwise it was no longer out. Now, because Hungary came into the picture this late of the Second World War, everything went with extreme speed. Where other countries, like in Poland, where they had a large Jewish population, the people were under this condition for like 5 years. But we had it only from March 19 till June 11. So June 1st, we got the order that whatever little belonging we have, pack up, line up on the street, because you will be taken to another country because they need laborers. Now, that was a most clever ploy on this earth. Why did they do it? To keep us calm and not to resist. But basically, that was all a lie. If they put us on a march to the other end of our city, which had nothing else but a brickyard, that particular area. It had no water, it had no housing, it had no toilets, nothing, just bricks and empty ground. Couldn't figure out why on earth did they bring us here. Aha, even that was figured out to perfection. The brickyard was adjacent to the railroad tracks, and on my 17th birthday, they put us on these railroad cars, and sometimes at our Illinois Holocaust Museum, we have an authentic cattle car, and I take the children on a tour, and I tell the children, this is the actual train that they brought in from Germany. And if I have young people coming, I say, okay, kids, come on inside. This is an empty train. When we were put in there, it had two buckets, one bucket for toilets and one bucket for water. So I'd ask the children, tell me how many people would be able to be in this enclosure. So the children look and figure, and they come to say, well, maybe 30, 35. Ladies and gentlemen, they crowded us in the capacity of 70 to 75 human beings. You cannot imagine the crowded conditions. Once the people were shoved in, I mean, there was no sitting room only, you know, just a few people could crouch down. So in order to allow my parents to sit on the wooden floor for 3 days of journey, I stood on my feet all the way, shifting from this corner to the other corner to the other corner. As the train was crossing the Carpathian Mountains between Hungary and Slovakia, I happened to be pushed into the little window, and I look out, and in a distance, I saw a shepherd minding his flock. And I think to myself, how come he is there and I am here? You see, I thought that the entire world was locked up in a boxcar. And I just couldn't imagine any other way. And another thought I had, I can't understand why he's there. I was a good girl. I haven't done anything bad. And how come he is not here? I mean, the point here is that my mind was so deranged, I didn't know what is happening. Now, by the way, the journey to the unknown took 3 days. That bucket of water that I told you a minute ago was never, ever refilled. I don't wish it on the world's worst enemy to grow to 3 days without water. Matter of fact, when I go to student groups to talk to the children, I kind of jokingly tell them, I said, you kids always walk around with your baby bottles wherever you go. Okay, I don't criticize you for doing it. Keep it up. But I want you during the summer, to like a 90-degree weather, to be without your bottle for 2 hours and see how torturing it is. So in this lengthy journey, it got to be so bad that your mind could not focus on anything else except thirst. You forgot about the problems, what's taking place, or what other ailments you may have had. I mean, it was so overpowering. So, and my dear parents are sitting on the ground there, and they, you know, try to comfort me, and what could they say? So now, finally, we arrive to the unknown.